This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio, WUWM. I'm Mitch Tyke. We're recording live this morning in front of a studio audience from Cudahy's Irish Pub inside the Pabst Theater in downtown Milwaukee, the culmination of our Project Milwaukee series called Wise Today, Well Tomorrow. If you're out and about in downtown Milwaukee this morning, please drop by and see us. If you're in your office or your kitchen or, you know, you're listening at night, as the old baseball broadcaster Vin Scully would say, pull up a chair and stick around for a while. We're also on video today, taped for broadcast on the Wisconsin iNetwork. We'll have details on how you can watch this broadcast on our website, WUWM.com. When Social Security entered the landscape in the Franklin Roosevelt administration, the life expectancy for Americans was what today qualifies as pretty much right in the middle of middle age. Today, though, the fastest growing segment of the population in Milwaukee County alone is the over 80 demographic. But while we're living longer than we used to, the picture is not entirely bright. In fact, the United States doesn't even crack the top 10 countries in the world as far as life expectancy goes. Conditions like diabetes and heart disease are on the rise. Television shows targeting seniors are filled with commercials for drugs and medical products designed to preserve the quality of life for people in declining health. In short, the paradigm seems to be this: we're living longer, but we're not necessarily any healthier. It's an odd contradiction, and here to help explain it is Dr. Edith Burns. Dr. Burns is an associate professor of medicine at the Medical College of Wisconsin in the Division of Geriatrics and Gerontology. Her research interests include immunology and aging. Edith Burns, welcome to Lake Effect.
Thank you very much.
How much truth is there to this notion that Americans are both living longer but are actually not necessarily any healthier than in past generations?
Yeah. Well, it's certainly true that we are living longer nowadays. The longer you live, the longer you can actually expect to live. So that life expectancy in the United States is really since the turn of the century, and certainly, as you mentioned, since Social Security has just really gone up exponentially. And part of that is related to improvements in public health. Now, are we living healthier as we get older? I think the other thing that we are seeing as a result of the increase in this very old demographic, you know, people over 80 being the fastest growing segment of our population, is that we are seeing more people living longer with chronic illness. Because certainly as we get older, that's one of the risks for developing chronic conditions.
Well, and that's obviously one of the factors behind this contradiction is that the longer you live, the if you took statistical models, the more likely you are later in life to get things like heart disease, diabetes, and other
arthritis
conditions.
Cancer is a real common one. Cancer, some kinds of cancer actually diminish in frequency after age 80, while others we think do continue to rise. Cognitive impairment or dementia also becomes increasingly more common with increasing age.
Talk about those public health issues that you said really informed or really affected the change in life expectancy. What was life like at the turn of the last century that kept people from living as long as they do now?
Well, I think at the turn of the last century, there was a much higher mortality rate in childhood, during childbirth. We also saw with improvements in public health, with proper sewage, with immunizations, the development of antibiotics. Those were major developments in medical capability that really led to major increases in the number of people who survived past those younger ages. Then obviously now, I know we'll talk a little more about the things we can do to help people survive longer with chronic conditions.
But let's go to earlier in life. Are Americans at a younger age healthier than they were in past generations?
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting question. I think in some ways the people who do live past childhood and our kids who are now, you know, in elementary school, teenagers, that they're in some ways less healthy, and we see that when we look at trends in obesity in this country. So we're seeing tremendous increases in the rates of obesity in adolescents, an increase in the occurrence of conditions that we didn't normally see until people were 60 and over, like type 2 diabetes, which is related to being overweight. And insulin resistance. So we're seeing more and more of that in our younger age groups.
I know in just recent weeks we had a guest on this program talking about the increase in pediatric kidney stones. And again, a very lifestyle-related issue based on eating unhealthy foods.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly more fast food availability and, you know, rush, 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 get things done. So,
Are we as a society at a point where medicine is simply then trying to keep up with poor lifestyle decisions?
You know, that's a complicated question, and I think the answer is fairly complex also. I think in some ways, we're dealing with poor lifestyle decisions. I think a lot of times, great examples from our clinical practice would be somebody who has been fairly healthy. They try to be physically active, watch what they eat. But as they get older, their cholesterol level goes up. That's sort of a normal change we see as people get older. And if they go to see their physician on a regular basis, they get their cholesterol levels checked. And all of a sudden, one day, the doctor says, well, you know, your cholesterol level's going up, so we should probably put you on some medication because that will help reduce your risk of developing heart disease and stroke. And the person goes on cholesterol medicine and they suddenly stop watching what they eat because, well, now I'm on the medication's going to take care of this for me so I don't have to be so careful in terms of some of these more difficult lifestyle decisions and processes that I was going through before.
It's like, what's the character from mythology? The Hydra that has the multiple heads,
yeah.
You kill off one and another
12
thing
heads,
comes up.
Yeah, and another one pops up.
Exactly. So, do you think, to get potentially into the psychology of aging, that one issue might be rising expectations, that Americans are used to a certain standard of living earlier in their lives? They feel relatively good when they're in their 20s and their 30s and their 40s, so that they're more likely to seek a medical solution to things that would typically happen in older age, you know, aches and pains, things like rising cholesterol?
I think that people nowadays, we're more health conscious as a society, and I think that we do a better job of going on a regular basis to check in with our physicians. You know, medically, we're doing a better job in terms of screening people for some of these chronic conditions, of trying to initiate treatment when some of these things appear so as to prevent more serious complications down the line. I think that because of, you know, the media, that in some ways we do have unrealistic expectations about what a medication and medicine can do for us. I think that
the pharmaceutical industry does a great job of telling us that that no matter what ails you, there's some kind of pill
that's going to help treat that. And then, gets everyone thinking, you know, do you feel tired? Are you feeling down? And everyone has bad days. That doesn't mean you're depressed enough that you should need to go on medication for it. And there's certainly, you know, other modalities to treat conditions like that, and I think many of us say, well, you know I should exercise, I know I should watch what I eat, but I'll do that tomorrow.
That gets, so, I mean, there must be an inexact science notion to measuring quality of life, at least for a scientist. I know there was a columnist in the New York Times some time ago who was posing the question that are baby boomers really any less healthy than past generations, or are they just whinier than past generations?
Do they complain more?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But it is a very subjective – quality of life is a very subjective issue.
Quality of life is subjective. I mean, it's what we would call idiosyncratic. What might be quality of life for one person is not necessarily for another person. So you might have somebody who lives happily in a nursing home. They may have a little bit of dementia, but they engage with staff and other residents there. And for someone else, the whole idea even of thinking of going into a nursing home is just intolerable. And they would feel that that would be just such a poor quality of life. So, in the United States, you know, we are a society that emphasizes autonomy, and so it's a subjective thing. And as scientists, we do try to measure quality of life. There are many different definitions depending upon the investigator, depending on the field. You can see different ways of doing it.
Well, talk about what some of those some of those measurements are that you as a gerontologist look for. What are the what is the outcome for a patient?
What is successful aging?
Right.
Essentially?
Well, exactly.
Yeah. Well, in geriatrics, a lot of what we look at is function. How well do people function on a day to day basis? Are they able to do very simple things? Can they get up in the morning and dress themselves? Can they get out of bed without help? Can they eat their breakfast if someone makes it for them and puts it in front of them? Can they take themselves to the bathroom when that need arises? Can they groom themselves? Can they take a shower or a bath without help? And then we look at more complex daily activities, like, is this somebody who can actually go and cook that breakfast for themselves? If they are taking a variety of medications for a number of chronic illnesses, can they get those medications out and take them in the proper way at the proper time? Can they go shopping to buy themselves food? How do they get their transportation issues? But certainly, you know, I think most of us would say there's more to quality of life than just those things. How much do we engage socially? How much, intellectually? So, again, it just points out that even in research, where you know that you think that they try to standardize things, there are still many layers and many different definitions of how we would look at that.
Have the questions changed for you as a scientist since you first got into this field, knowing that available treatments and understanding of what's going on maybe physiologically has changed? Have the questions that you ask changed in 5, 10, 15, 20 years?
Yeah, for me they've changed in the sense that because I work with adults who are all over 65, many of them will have chronic conditions when they come to me, but because they have longer life expectancy, if I have somebody coming in who's 70 years old, they might have 20 years of life still ahead of them. And so I think it's much more imperative for me as a geriatrician when I'm working with my patients to try and engage them to be active partners in management of their conditions. And that means, trying to find out what they understand about their illnesses, what they consider to be quality of life, why they manage certain conditions the way they manage them. I think you mentioned going to the doctor for, quote, aches and pains. People, again, it ties in some of those, what are their expectations about if I have, for example, if I have diabetes and I eat certain things, how is that going to affect my diabetes? How does that then later inform my decision? Make sure that they know, how can I look at the lifestyle management decisions that I make to know that they're working? What am I monitoring to know whether or not my treatments are working? For a lot of the chronic conditions we have, people don't necessarily have a lot of acute symptoms at any given point in time. And, through our life experience, we actually learn to think that when we have physical symptoms, that's when we're sick. So when you get certain chronic conditions that don't necessarily cause acute symptoms in the beginning, before you start to get complications, then you often don't know,
right,
that that's a problem. And so you might not want to comply with taking that medication because you don't feel sick.
Do you think aging is a longer process now, or has it just been moved back in our chronology? Are people aging from 70 to 100 now, where they used to just age from 50 to 70, or is aging really not start until later in life and it's a longer process?
It definitely starts early in life because the lifestyle decisions and activities you engage in when you're younger definitely affect your health in later life. And unfortunately, I think as a medical community, we've tended to emphasize and be rewarded for acute intervention as opposed to prevention. And I think we're trying to switch to a more preventative approach now. And hopefully, if more people engage in those healthy activities, they'll be healthier when they get older.
Well, Edith Burns, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Dr. Edith Burns is an associate professor of medicine at the Medical College of Wisconsin in the Division of Geriatrics and Gerontology, and also the director of ambulatory geriatrics at the Zablocki VA Medical Center in Milwaukee. We'll take a break, and when we return to our live broadcast from the Pabst Theater, we'll have a discussion of how the internet and the information age is affecting how we're able to take control of our own health. Keep listening. This is Lake Effect from WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio.